John Harry Turan, wonderful talking with you, learning about event formation. Now, you told me we're going to talk about something which intrigued me. This caught me off guard and intrigued me. You mentioned the $112 million woman. What's that all about?
Well, it's an interesting thing that happened to me today. As you notice, I take my data from wherever I get it. I was sitting in my office here when Anita, my assistant and business partner for many years, came in and said, "You got to read this, John." And it says at the top, "Only in America." And it came from Parade magazine, I think, this past weekend. So this is documented. I mean, I'm holding the thing in my hand right now, this paper, this the Parade magazine, and it says, the headline says, "The $112 million dollar woman." And I'm thinking to myself, what is this? Until I started reading it, and I said, oh my gosh, I'm talking about event formation. I got a quote from this. I got to read a few pieces about it. And it says here, Cynthia Stafford saw herself winning the lottery, and then she did. But what she did next is even more amazing. Okay, we wouldn't worry about what she did next. What you probably know, she saw herself winning the lottery and she bought tickets. Good. But here's what it says about her. It says, what would you do if you won the lottery? Buy a fancy car? That's what Cynthia Stafford did after cashing in her $112 million ticket. She scooped up two Bentleys, a baby blue convertible, a bright orange sedan. Maybe you take a first-class trip to Paris or hire a personal trainer and so forth. She did all of that, but she did more than change her lifestyle. She changed her life. And then it goes on to say how it happened. It says, back in January 2007, Stafford was raising five children and struggling to pay the bills. She began lulling herself to sleep every night by imagining that she was holding a lottery ticket, a lottery check. She pictured the exact amount as 112, followed by lots of zeros, lots and lots of zeros. The story seemed implausible, and yet Stafford's steady gaze and positive energy make you believe her. When they were interviewing her, even the bit about knowing what she'd be wearing when she won. Now, let me stop here for a second from reading and say, here was a woman raising five kids. They weren't all hers. She took in her brother's four kids when her brother died in an accident, and those plus hers made five, and she was working real hard to raise these kids. But yet there was a feeling that, I'm going to go to bed, I'm going to lull myself to sleep, seeing myself with a check for the amount of money that I have won, or at least that I have won the money. And she did every night. She said she even saw herself wearing this lime green blouse with a leaf print. And she said, that part surprised me because I didn't think I was going to still have that top. I thought I was going to lose weight by then and get a new one. But that's what she was wearing the next Mother's Day when she learned the $2 ticket she'd bought made her the sole winner in a drawing worth, yes, $112 million. When I found out, she said, I sat in silence for a minute because it confirmed how powerful our minds can be. And it goes on and on to tell the story and saying something to the effect that she stayed humble and wise and happy, helped a lot of people. But she was asked a question: what would she do if she lost all of it, every bit of the amount of money she won? And she says, I'll just do it again. I'll just start. She used the word visualizing again. And we talked about this in previous sessions. And I said, yes. Now, of course, the reporter wasn't up to these things because he would have said, I questioned her more about it. Was this law of attraction? Was just visualizing? And yes, it was all of that. But there was something else I feel that she did that nobody thought to even ask her. She start feeling how it would be if the thing she wanted to have happen happened. It was in her mind. It wasn't a forced thing like every day I gotta win the lottery or else I'll die. I gotta get a lot of money. No, she just thought this is what she wanted. Before she went to sleep, she quietly went about seeing it, feeling it, knowing it. And if you do that, it's like having just the universe is a giant gift-giving machine. You don't have to yell at it. You don't have to scream at it to give you anything. It's saying to you, there it is, just tell me what you want. What are your desires? And you don't have to write a long email, or you don't have to have the letter certified or anything. All you have to do is have a wisp of a desire, just a slight desire, and let it go. Let it go. Don't dwell on the hows or whys or wherefores of it, just the desire. You are giving your orders, so, to the order-taking machine which we have been given since our birth. We are able to get these things. So the point of this story of a $112 million woman is to show those who are listening here, if they think that all I'm talking about are clouds, I love that, just clouds, there are situations or examples like this one that just appeared in Parade magazine. And there are so many other stories about how people use this power we have to get what they want, to create events. It doesn't have to do only with money. I've always said and maintained that there are three problems: money, health, relationships. Name any problem you have, it'll fit under one of those. How about, job? A job is different from health and relationship and money. No, most people work at a job because they need the money. Now, there are exceptions to everything, I'm sure, but I say generally. So this power of creating events would bring to you, if you're looking for a relationship, a very, very wonderful relationship, providing you, of course, can feel it, you know it. You know how people say, I feel it in my bones. Some gamblers are good at that. They know what is going to happen. They feel it. And who knows? They may have caused the event to happen. I think it's a good bit of that myself. And of course, yes, I could hear some laughter from the back of the room and say, yeah, yeah. And I'm Houdini. Well, no, nor am I. But check it out every once in a while. You will find that things that you fear deeply would come to you. Remember the old story of Job? That which I have feared most has come upon me. And then you can also remember the story of this woman who won $112 million because she said, just before going to sleep, I just think about it calmly. I don't angst about it. And I just know that it's going to happen. And one fine, beautiful day, it happened, and she went and she got her check, and she's producing movies now. She helped her parents. She put away enough for the kids. We can do that with our problems also. But you know what's standing in our way of vaporizing our problems like we can vaporize clouds? Because if you look at a cloud and say, how did I do that? I didn't even touch it. Didn't even touch it. And I got rid of that. Try it, folks. Try it sometimes. You'd be amazed. How did I do that? That's impossible. The minute you start using words like impossible, you're beginning to limit yourself. How about changing the words you're using from that's impossible to that's strange? That's strange. And Steve, I also think you are an expert on NLP, am I correct? Where the meanings of what we say to ourselves influence us tremendously?
Yes, you're correct.
Okay. Then when I say something is impossible versus something is strange, I have just changed the conversation a little bit. Not a lot. I have just said, well, it's not impossible, it's just strange. And the strange can become normal or ordinary, because I think the more ordinary we become, the more extraordinary we are, because then we're getting into the full use of our powers. See, many times we aren't permitted to use them because we haven't graduated to the point. It's like putting a razor or a knife in the hands of a little child. To protect the child, you have to prevent him from having a knife, a long knife. So sometimes we are not permitted to use these things until we learn how to use them. And that's a good thing, because in my younger days, oh gosh, if wishes could kill people, I would have left a trail of hundreds of people, from some college professors that I couldn't stand, to some people who used to beat me up in high school all the time, to others who used to tell me how terrible I was. And, you know, I just a terrible guy, you know, maybe I could just wish him away. But because I didn't know exactly how to do this, thank God I didn't wish anybody away. And so that's why we evolve into these things, and we can train ourselves to manage them. I don't say control these things, these abilities, because I don't think we should control things. We should manage things. We could manage our abilities. What would it be like if you could, for example, deal with everybody who insults you? You'd probably cause a lot of damage. How much more beautiful and creative it is if somebody insults you and you don't even bother with it. How much more creative, how much better it would be, where you are not, you're only, somebody can only insult you if you are insultable. But you could stand above all of that and let the quiet power within you go out and take care of the things that you need to take care of. You need to get that mortgage paid. Trust the process. Don't have even 1 ounce of doubt in your mind. Of course you'll say to me, come on, John, how would I not? I'm under such pressure. The kids are crying out that they're hungry. We're down to the last noodle in the box. The mortgage isn't paid. We're up to about 3 months. They're about ready to foreclose. And I got to say to you, I have no idea, except I know how that feels. And you might trust and trust. And here is something that might happen. And the last moment, a check or something comes in that brings you up to date with a little extra. And then again, at the last moment, you're trusting and trusting and trusting, and nothing happens. And they're going to be selling your house at the courthouse steps in a few days. And you have been asked to leave. And you say to yourself, you know, I trusted the process. And nothing happens. And on your way home, which is soon to be your lost home, your ex-home, you thought, okay, don't know. I hardly have any money for food. I got to go in and get a newspaper from this little gas station. And I think I'll pick up the newspaper and look for a new job or see what I do or something. And you go in there and you get this urge. You're losing your house tomorrow, okay? You get this urge to get the paper, and then you saw somebody buying a lottery ticket, and you have the urge like you have never had before, and you bought one, and it's going to draw in about 2 or 3 weeks. And when it does, you become the $112 million man or woman. But you've lost your house. But because you got so much money, you would have moved anyway. So see how it works? Sometimes we give up within 1 yard of the finish line. They always say the longest yard, that's the last one. Sometimes we tend to want to give up and see everything really, really bad. Sometimes all we have to do is fight a little longer. The story is told of the Emperor Napoleon. After he lost at Waterloo and he was imprisoned, he's sitting in there and a bunch of reporters were given permission to interview the great general. And so they started asking him about the war and losing and everything else. And one reporter, a little quieter than the rest, said, Mon General, Mr. General, why did the English win at Waterloo? And he looked at the reporter and he said, what? And the reporter repeated it. Why did the English win at Waterloo? Did they have better fighting people, fighting men? And Napoleon said no. Did they have a lot of better armor or weapons? And Napoleon said no. And the young reporter said, but Mr. General, why then did the English win? And the general, the ex-emperor Napoleon, looked at the reporter and said, don't ever forget this. The English fought 5 minutes longer. Isn't that the case with us? We are 5 minutes from the event that we've been forming and longing for. And just before getting there, within minutes of it happening, we stop, change directions, and give up. Remember this well. The English fought 5 minutes longer. That's why they won. So sometimes when you're trying everything, you're reading every holy book you can find, you're saying every affirmation, you're believing, you're saying, I'm going to believe this, and it's not taking. Your mind is saying to you, another voice within you is saying, you may believe that, but I don't, because we all are many people in one, I think, at times. There's the John that's kind and nice, the John that likes jelly beans, the John that can't stand jelly beans, the John that likes to be quiet, the John that gets angry sometimes. We all have different ones. It's like they talk to us. And sometimes we talk to ourselves, say, I'm going to believe this. And something else says, nope, you're not, because you know that's a lot of nonsense. Didn't your parents teach you better? Didn't school teach you better? And yet you keep persisting. That's okay, but I choose to do this. I want to do this. I am going to believe this, and I am going to trust this process, and I am going to wait. I'm going to wait for that guidance that will only come when I'm quiet. That's how this thing works. That's how event formation works. That's how a beautiful marriage can work, or relationship, or money, or creating whatever physical things you want, because they start by not being physical. Physical things are actually mental things precipitated as solid, I think, from a scientific point of view. That's how it appears. So work with the laws of creating events. And they're not crazy laws. They're simple things about belief, trust, all of the good things.
Very well said, John. You know, one of the things that you said a little while back that really resonates with me is the distinction between my problem and the problem. And I remember in studying psychology and learning about children and so forth, and you having raised two children, you know this better than many people, that if you tell a kid that he or she has a problem or that they're bad because of the way they are, then that's different from saying that I don't like the way you are behaving or what you are doing. Because when you phrase it that way, you're separating them from the behavior that you don't want them to continue. And so this distinction, the separation, carries over into what you're saying when you talk about my problem versus the problem. My problem means it's stuck to me. It's mine. Mm-hmm. I own it. There's no separation. The problem makes it a separate entity. It's separate from me, and it's separate from the person when they're thinking about that. So I want to really thank you for pointing out that powerful distinction. I also want to point out to those listening just how important this is, that we separate it from us. That way, it's easier to rid ourselves of it.
Absolutely. Remember the story about the monkeys? All they had to do is let go, separate it, just put it away. This isn't my problem. Sometimes, you ever hear people tell you about their arthritis? I've heard this because I knew some people with it. Oh, my poor arthritis. What is so poor about your arthritis? Arthritis is bugging the life out of you. It's hurting you. Why do you claim it? Maybe you love it so much. You're keeping it with you. Tell it it's done its job. It's time to go. Send it away. It can be done. And if you believe it and feel it, hey, let me show you a practical example. You're right, Steve. I have two children, a boy and a girl. And when they were little, especially the girl who is the older, because I had much more time to spend with her. We always do that with our first child. You know, you have 1,000 pictures or photos of the first child the first year. You know, you're taking a picture every day as if it's magical. And by the time you get to the second and third or fourth child, if you have that many, you will find that you take maybe 3 pictures a year. But we were very close to my daughter because she was the first one. She was separated by 4 years from my other child. And ever since I can remember, because children get sick from everything you can think of, they pick it up someplace, maybe it's they're testing their immune system. And ever since she was little, I'd put her on my knees and I'd talk to her. And when she had a cold, I'd say, "Okay, honey, all you got to do, let's play the game. Here's the game. We're going to send it away. Just before you go to bed, just send it away, send it away." And we continued that for years. Now, you know what? My daughter hardly ever has to go to the doctor. To this day, if she gets a cold or a cough, it goes away very quickly because I smile, look at her, and wink and say, "You know how to get rid of that?" And she said, "Just send it away." I am a little bit worried that as she gets older and older, she discovers that, "What is this silly thing my dad used to tell me?" But so far, she hasn't thought of it that way. She just sends it away, and the cold disappears. If not in a day, 2 days, and she doesn't even have to go to the doctor. She's the person who has gone least to the doctor in all these years. And now you might say, "Well, does your son do the same thing?" My answer is no, because when he was little, we had a lot of turmoil in the house. I was at the point where I was losing everything and had to figure, how am I going to feed my family? What am I going to do? And all those other things that a lot of people today deal with. And then a very short while after, my son was just 4 years old, and his mom was diagnosed with cancer. And so I never got to spend the time with him, teaching him these things when he was very young. So he goes to the doctor much more often. He has a lot more things happen to him. But think of it this way. Train yourself, teach yourselves now, all those who are listening, to start with a little thing and to accept maybe it's not impossible. Maybe it's just a little strange. Maybe it's possible. We cannot be sure of anything to say it's 100% going to happen. It's 100% going to fail. You might mess it up and still succeed. So you can't do that. It's what I said to a bunch of women in a lecture once, because they thought they were, you know, "We're getting older. We don't look as beautiful as we did." "Well, why do you say that, ma'am?" I asked one. "Well, you know, looked at the mirror like I do, you would see those bags and you would see that. I am just old and full of wrinkles and everything." And I smiled. I said, "You know what? The very cells of your body are hearing you, they're feeling you, and they're responding to exactly what you think. So here's my suggestion. When you look at the mirror, if you are not brave enough to say, 'Wow, beautiful,' start by saying, 'Huh, not bad, not bad.' And as you do that, your subconscious will start working for you according to your desires, not according to what you fear or hate. When you hate something, you're tying that thing to you. When you fear it, you're tying it to you. So let go. Vaporize clouds. Get rid of the clouds in your life by seeing through them." I remember as I analyzed the thing, looking at clouds, vaporizing clouds, creating events. I remember when I looked at the white cloud, and I saw it, I was seeing through it. I wasn't whacking the cloud with all kinds of things. I was seeing in my mind the blue sky behind it. And a minute later, I was seeing the blue sky in reality because the cloud had gone. So form events. Know, get a feel for what you want. Because if you don't know what you want, you would have no idea how to get it. But what is it you really want to do? Many people have major problems because they can't figure what they want to do or what it is that would make them happy. They think one thing will make them happy. For example, a guy might say, you know, or a gal might say, you know, if I only get to marry that guy, he is tall, dark, handsome. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. And he's rich, and I'll be the happiest person in this life. And so she gets married to him, and it was great for 6 months and a year. And then the next year, she says, if I can only get rid of the so-and-so, I'll be the happiest person in this life. And people get to this. If I had a lot of money, I'd be happy. Then they get a lot of money, and they find there's something missing. The missing thing is within you. That's where you have to find it, not out there, because from you will come all the power you need to live in this universe, to live on this earth, to be happy, to be fulfilled. I believe that we were given everything we need to do that, because if we were not, if we were just thrown like little human forms of accident throughout the world, almost all 7 billions of us, I'd sit back, and if I could have a conversation with God, if I had been looking, I'm just using this symbolically, by the way, I would say, Lord, God, you know, even I could have made a better world than that. So I think it's much better than we think it is. Therefore, anyone who is listening to me tonight, I ask you to do a number of things. Start by sitting down quietly someplace where you wouldn't be bothered by things. If you're watching television, finish what you're watching or turn it off if it's not that important. If you're doing it just to hear some noise, turn it off. Sit quietly, breathe deeply, and picture yourself surrounded by infinite possibilities, that you are the center of the universe. And guess what? You are. Because if you didn't exist, for you, the universe wouldn't be existing. You know, you are the center of your world. You are the center of everything. This world would have been a very sad place if you weren't here. It would have been very different. That's how much difference you make in the world. Sit down. Use the power of gratitude. Think of 3, 4, 5, 10 things that you're grateful for, whatever they are. I'm sure you could probably find 100 that you're not grateful of, but don't look there. Look at the ones you have. If you have a family, good family, happy family, you love them, be grateful for them. If you have a job or you're earning a good living, be grateful for that. If you don't have a job and you aren't doing well, be grateful that there's another one just around the corner and you'll be doing very well. So go about, friends. Create your entire event. Create whatever it is you want, because the power comes from you. This is what we call event formation.
John, that is a great way to wrap up this entire segment. I think that you have got a gift that is so rare, and that is the wisdom that you possess. And the gift part is that you're able to impart that information to us. So whereas I didn't know anything about the topic beforehand, now I know a tremendous amount. And my biggest takeaway from this has been to just relax and let it happen, to just stop getting involved directly in this pushing activity and just start letting it happen. And the universe, as you said, is ready to give us everything and ready to help us out if we will just let it. So, John, thank you from the bottom of my heart for all the tremendous information you've shared with us.
It was my pleasure, Steve, and I look forward to our next session.
Thank you, John. And on behalf of myself, Steve G. Jones, and John Harry Turan, we wish you an outstanding life.